Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Okay, folks, we are here today. We're under a severe thunderstorm watch, severe thunderstorm warning. So if it starts getting thundery and lightning and it's really close, I'm going to have to go. Good to see. I've got somebody in the chat room now. Like I said, we're under a severe thunderstorm watch. So if it starts doing some heavy duty stuff out there, I might have to end the show early today. It seems that the lying liberal mainstream media just can't help themselves. After President Trump's speech the other day in Orlando, Florida, where he kicked off his re-election bid for a second term as president, the media, or the MEDA, as I am beginning to call them, have started their ideals that Trump is going to lose in a landslide. Trump will never make it back into the White House for his second term. Trump will be beat like you have never seen before. But I was amazed the other day. I was watching CNN, and don't ask me why, but I was amazed because CNN actually had a few moments of clarity and actual truthfulness when this exchange happened. If you listen, one of their commentators actually came up and talked about the crowds Trump is drawing, and are we going to ignore that? And I left the beginning of the clip in there with Dan Bongino, is where I actually got this clip from, because he cues this up just perfectly.
It's about a minute exchange where one of the commentators breaks down, Joe, and he's like, hey, man,
yeah,
are we going to ignore 100,000 people RSVPing to a Trump event in Orlando? He's been president 2 years. The excitement's supposed to ebb right now, not flow. Check out this cut, and really, hat tip to them for a moment of honesty.
Stayed at home. That's a very, very concerning problem for Democrats. We have to give those voters a reason to come out again.
David Talley, did I read you? Go ahead, David.
To what Bakari is saying, and he mentioned it several times now, I do want to underscore it. I think it is really instructive. When you look, this notion of excitement, of enthusiasm, when you look at people pitching tents, and waiting for 2 days to get it, the Trump rally, for people who are just coming out of the woodwork because they are so committed and loyal to this man that they want to see and join this effort of this reelection. You have to ask yourself, among those 23 Democrats, which one of those do you think are going to have people that would be pitching tents a day before a rally to get inside and show their support? And I think, obviously I don't mean that literally, but I do mean that as an instruction that you have to think through which one of these Democrats can enthuse their supporters that much that they can like take this battle to the president. I think that's going to be a big question in this primary season.
Okay, you see, my friends, even CNN, the crying news network, is showing signs of actually seeing what is really going on here. But don't expect that to last. They will go back to their being the crying news network all too soon. But it's funny to call them and others out there, you know, when they finally, out of a moment of weakness, do show that they can see the truth. And it's out there. Today is the 22nd day, 23rd day of May, June, in the year of our Lord, 2019. And it is summer now, folks. It is summer. And springtime is no longer here. Summer is here. We are... just happy that summer is here. But back to our story. The trouble is, CNN is not where the troubles of today lie. Our troubles lie in the fact that the powers that be cannot follow our laws and are constantly trying to make us change to the ways that do not work. You know, communism, socialism, Islam. All are being forced on us in ways that it shouldn't be. And yet the proof of them never working or being destructive to our way of life are evident everywhere. Yet we still get the left telling us that all we need to be is more like them. No. That is not what we need to do. What we need to do is look at what is really going on and then fight to keep our country safe from them, not bring more of them to us and make us change for them. That is not, nor will it ever be, the way to keep this nation and her citizens safe and free. This is the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, or NWCR, and I am your host, Robert the Infidel, with today's show. Infidel is a moniker that I bear and wear proudly. Islam calls me an infidel. Well, I will infidel them right up the rear end with the facts. Welcome to the show.
Hour one of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. At the rate our leaders are ignoring our Constitution, we're finding that they cannot lead, nor do they want to keep us safe from our enemies. And yes, we have some. From the crossroads of America, the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show is brought to you through the traditional American Patriot Network with the Doctor of this Republic, showing that the truth can be told to save this nation. And now, on with the show.
Okay, we are back. As I say every week, one of these days I'm going to have to get that redone because we are no longer with the traditional American Patriot Network. We are with Conservative Nation Media, which is essentially the one that I started out in. And when it went under a few years ago and stopped because the owners decided to stop, they gave it to me. I'm working to bring it back now, and I've got some news about that after a little while, but we are back. The call-in number is 646-478-5284. If you want to join in the discussion, from Real Clear Politics comes this one, folks. The headline, ex-Secret Service agent. People need to know the real Hillary Clinton and how dangerous she is. And this one, like I said, comes from Real Clear Politics. Former Secret Service officer Gary Byrne, author of the new book Crisis of Character, which examines Hillary Clinton's conduct under his watch, appeared on Monday's broadcast of Fox News Channel's Hannity. Byrne talked of Hillary Clinton's temperament, her terrified staff, Bill Clinton carrying on affairs, drug use in the White House, and more with host Sean Hannity. Byrne said Clinton was feared by her staff and was notorious for her yelling. Byrne also told Hannity that she has blown up at him and other Secret Service agents. She gets angry at things that are policy issues that, you know, take time to fix, he said. And she's got this attitude where she wants things fixed right now, immediately. She screams and yells at people. That's what Burns said in the interview aired on Monday night. He went on and said, quote, there's many examples that I cite in my book where she blows up at people. Like I've said, she has blown up at me before and agents and her staff. At one time, I saw her staff so afraid to tell her about a mistake that was made, they weren't upset about the waste of the mistake ordering the wrong invitations. They were terrified that someone was going to have to tell Hillary Clinton that there was a mistake made, unquote. Burns says Clinton's behavior during his tenure in the Secret Service proved to him that she does not have the temperament for the Oval Office. And I've got a couple of audio clips on this one. Here is the first one.
Because why? Let me ask that.
Because I want Americans to know what the real Clinton administration is like. Mrs. Clinton is not a leader. She's a very, very angry person all the time. I've seen many instances that I talk about in my book, Crisis of Character, where she displays this holier-than-thou attitude, do as I say, not as I do. She's a dictator. She comes across as a dictator. I've seen her berate many people, and myself included. And I've never seen any example that would lead me to believe that she could lead this country.
That's a strong statement. But it's coming from a man who had to deal with her almost on a daily basis, if not an hourly basis, while she was in the White House as First Lady, which all I can say is she was one of the worst First Ladies we have ever had, nor probably will ever have. And the woman would have to be horrible in order to become the worst First Lady after Hillary Clinton. But this is something I've been saying for a long time now. Hillary Clinton does not have the temperament to be in the White House as the president. She was a horrible First Lady, and she would be a horrible president. She would be a president that would probably even make Obama look good. But he goes on to discuss more about this woman.
Been made about temperament.
Yes.
And the temperament of a president.
Yes.
You're describing someone by far that does not have control of her emotions or temperament.
Yeah. She exhibits some very dangerous behavior, as I would describe it. She gets angry at things that are policy issues that, you know, take time to fix. And she's got this attitude where she wants things fixed right now, immediately. She screams and yells at people. And there's procedures. You know, government is very bogged down with rules and regulations. And there's many examples that I cite in my book where she blows up at people. Like I said, she's blown up at me before, and agents and her staff. At one time, I saw her staff so afraid to tell her about a mistake that was made. They weren't upset about the waste of the mistake, ordering the wrong invitations. They were terrified that someone was going to have to tell Hillary Clinton that there was a mistake made.
Oh, by the way, you're not the only one to say this. George Stephanopoulos, he
sure
described her as having,
yes,
a horrible temper. Dee Dee Myers is another person.
Yeah.
And you even quoted George, I know, in the book.
Yes.
And then you write, though portrayed as a long-suffering spouse of an unfaithful husband whose infidelities I personally observed, and we'll get to that in a minute,
sure,
and know to be true, she was anything but a sympathetic victim.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, and they go on to talk about how when Hillary Clinton is not in front of a microphone, she's a totally different person. She is mean. She's cold. She's calculating. She hates everybody. She thinks everybody is going to get her, so she's going to get them first. In front of the microphones and the cameras when they're turned on, she is a totally different person. She is sweet. She is demure. She is supporting her husband in a way that almost makes you sick with the way that he has gone against her by having an affair after an affair. And Byrne talked and wrote about the then President Bill Clinton's behavior, accusing him of carrying on multiple affairs, and gave his perspective on Monica Lewinsky affair and the scandal as it was happening. Byrne talked about several different affairs and how the Secret Service was expected to clean up after him. Hannity asked, how many women do you know for sure that he had affairs with in the Oval Office? And Byrne says, in the White House complex, I'd say easily three, maybe four that I know of. Hannity, and you could see Monica Lewinsky from a mile away. Byrne says, sure, sure. And Hannity says, you knew she wanted to be near him. And Byrne says, she was certainly manipulated on some staff. She was certainly manipulated some of the staff and other officers, myself, to find out where he was. Hannity said she wasn't manipulating if you saw through it. And Byrne says, yeah, I agree, but I saw through it right away. But she was trying to place herself in his path as he would move throughout the complex. Then Byrne talks about drug use in the White House under Clinton. And Hannity goes on to say, before I get into all these issues involving Bill and Hillary, what she knew and didn't know, covering up the lying and you being in the middle of all of this, people use drugs at the White House. And Byrne said there were some issues. One of the ones that I commented in my book, and I'm very careful not to tell too much about because I don't want, hopefully this person got on with their lives and lived a healthy life. But there was this one particular staff member that they'd come in the morning and they'd be so beat up and exhausted looking, worn out, exhausted to the point where they couldn't even be seen saying good morning. And they'd go into their office and go to the bathroom and come out of the bathroom completely elevated and happy and smiling. And Hannity asked, was it obvious that you thought coke was being used? And Byrne said, I did. And later on, I was told that this particular person, actually, they did something similar to the intervention that got her help and got her to a clinic, but I never did see her again. But I understand she did all right, which is a good thing. These are things, folks, that we have to sit there and look at. We have to think about for a while because Hillary Clinton shows us a totally different type of personality than she really is when she's in front of the camera. In front of the camera, she's, except when she gets herself lambasted on something, she always tries to make everybody think that she's the one that we need to trust. She's the one who loves America. She's the one who loves all of us. She's the one who wants to do good for all of us. But really, she is an angry, angry woman who hates everything that isn't her. And it's really a good thing that we did not vote for her and put her into the White House, because this nation would be really hurting. If we thought this nation hurt under Obama, Hillary would have made it worse. I guarantee you on that one. Now, the reason that this show continues, my friends, is because it tells the story of what the Democrats or Islamists or anyone who doesn't really love this country are doing to this nation, and how every time someone gets into office with America First ideas and follow the laws ideals, then that must be gotten rid of because it doesn't fit their agenda. And I keep getting asked by people, what is their agenda? And I keep saying, it is to destroy America as it was founded. My proof? Oh, it's out there, folks, if you just look. And I'm not the kind of media person who will hold that to myself and not say it. From WND comes this one, folks. And the headline tells you something is not right here. WND exclusive. Headline, Islamists demand UN launch censorship campaign. Want world group to they want the world group to ban speech that may offend Muhammad. Now, people, for crying outside here, Muhammad was a murderer, a pedophile, and dead. When he died, he didn't come back to life after 3 days like Jesus did. He stayed dead. I don't give a flying fat carp if he is offended or not. But the story goes on. Islamist nations, especially those in the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, long have sought a determination from the United Nations that any criticism of Islam or Muslims is Islamophobia and banned globally. It's not Islamophobia if they give you the reason to be phobic about them. And they do. If you are not part of Islam, you are an infidel, and you deserve nothing more than having your head cut off or killed or something. What about that is not to be feared? Especially if you are a Christian or a Jew or even an atheist or, heck, even a Muslim. Okay, go after them too, folks. But each time it has been brought up for a vote, more realistic arguments prevailed, and the campaign never was legitimized. However, the idea is back. According to a report from MSM, it is now Pakistan that has endorsed a plan to combat hate speech. Envoy Malia Lodi endorsed a plan from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, saying that without censorship, quote, an inevitable consequence is to fan the flames of bigotry, intolerance, anti-Muslim hatred, and xenophobia, unquote. But they go on to say, my Prime Minister Imran Khan has recently called for urgent action to counter Islamophobia, which is today the most prevalent expression of racism and hatred against the other, the Pakistani told meeting of diplomats and high-ranking UN officials. The trouble is, folks, like I said before, it is not racism or hatred to tell the truth about Islam and let people know what a murderous cult they are. Now, I know that there are all kinds of things everywhere that will ban you from speech and saying things that you really need to say to get people to understand the danger they are in. I try on my Facebook Live NWCR's removing the liberal blindfold, the updates that I do that are rush type updates, except I use video with them. I do those daily, but for the past week, I've been in Facebook jail. Why? Because I will say something like this. Facebook don't like it, so they will ban me. And when they ban me, they think that I can't get my words out. I still do. One of these days, this show will probably get banned also, because Blog Talk Radio, I'm sure, is not a right-wing situation, although there are a lot of conservative shows on here. So they must be tolerant about something. And I've been on Blog Talk Radio since 2007. I've been here for 12 years, off and on, mostly on. I started my own show. When I started my own show, you didn't have to be a premium member to have an hour-long show or a two-hour-long show. I did my hour-long shows, my two-hour-long shows when I could. Then I burned out. I'm not sure if I burned out or just suddenly had no time to do this for a while. I stopped. I think it was something like about 3 months. When I came back, I could only do a half an hour show because Blog Talk Radio had changed their ideals, changed their plan. They decided that money was the way that they needed to be here for. So in order to get more than a half an hour show and three things in your studio, you had to pay a premium, which I do now. The premium's not much. I didn't know how much it was for a long, long time. And then I finally got with Conservative Nation Media. I stayed with them until after they disappeared, and it turned out that nobody told me what was going on. It's just that all of a sudden, I was the only show out there. I think the next, the last one to drop off of before me was American by Design with Bing Fisher. He's the last one to do a show. Then I was alone for several months. And during that first month, month and a half or so, something like that, I was able to do my two-hour shows until the premium ran out. And then I was down to my half-hour shows. And I did them. Then I started asking what had happened. The owners of Conservative Nation Media had to move on. They had other things to do. They had their lives to live. They let it go. I asked Michael Smith, I think it was, I asked him if he wanted to get it started again. He said no. But I could have it if I wanted. So I took it. Paid the premium. Been doing my two-hour shows since. And I found out since that I could actually do a three-hour show if I wanted to. Even though the third hour would not be on the air. But anyone who was listening to a phone or in the chat room would get to hear it. Or anyone who listened to the archives would get to hear it. Because it would all be there. But Blog Talk Radio has actually been good to us. But the problem comes in past attempts. The censorship program proposed at the UN have been described as anti-defamation efforts that would protect religion. Problem is, Islam is not a religion, it's more of a cult. And almost invariably, these plans have protected Islam, but not even mentioned other faiths. It was in a report at the Investigative Project on Terrorism where it was explained that Khan already had been calling for the death penalty against those who offend the Prophet Muhammad. Well, the Prophet Muhammad is dead. How in the heck is anybody going to know if he's offended or not? He also urged the OIC to work to safeguard the religious sentiments of Muslims. Well, like I said before, Islam is not a religion, it's a cult. He went on to say, it was up to us to explain to the Western people the amount of pain they cause us when they ridicule or mock our holy prophet. And that's what he told the OIC's recent Islamic summit in Mecca. I would like to say from this platform that in the forums like the United Nations and forums like the European Union, we must explain to them that they cannot hurt the sentiments of 1.3 billion people under the garb of freedom and of expression. These people don't understand here. Freedom of expression gives us the same rights to say the same kind of things that they say about us. We're infidels. We are damned. We are horrible people because we don't believe in Allah. And when I say it, it's with a little A. Because I believe in God. With a big G. I believe in Jesus as my Savior. But the OIC's 57 members are the largest voting bloc in the UN. Guterres has been promoting a conference on the role of education in fighting hate speech, and Lodhi said he would be fully committed to that effort. He said, "We are fully committed to support the UN strategy on hate speech. This is a moment for all of us to come together and reverse the tide of hate and bigotry that threatens to undermine social solidarity and peaceful coexistence. With Islam, there is no peaceful coexistence unless you belong to them." That is the part that's being left out here. That is the part that's not being put out here. And it's something that we have to remember because, but they won't, you know, if Islamists don't like the way the rest of the Christian world is, then go the hell back to your Mecca. Leave the rest of us alone, but they won't, because all you have to do is listen to me here. All you have to do, have to listen to on me here is because they don't want to go home. They want to conquer the world and make it Islam, period. Look at all the photos from around the world of them having Islamic protests where they're holding signs saying Islam will behead the world. Islam will dominate the world. Is that a peaceful religion? No, I would say it's not. But the thing is, if you come away from this with anything, remember the last thing I said here, because they want global domination over everything, period. Nothing less will do, and demanding things and other nations they have no right to demand is all part of that. They get things that they have no right to demand, and that just gives them more power. And that has to stop, folks. That has to stop.
We will be right back after these important messages.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
What lifestyle our military families live while they serve to protect us, both foreign and domestically. These families say goodbye to their loved ones for months and even years at a time. They miss births, birthdays, Christmases, anniversaries, first steps, first words, and they are sometimes not even recognized upon their return. They move every 2 to 4 years, their children have to go to a new school, make new friends, and just to keep up with all the changes and losses while their parent is gone is hard work. A lot of people don't realize the financial burden of relocating a family time and time again. Not only that, but insurance rates change every time, coming up with first, last, and deposit for an apartment if there isn't housing available to you. Traveling home for emergencies that the military doesn't cover. The list goes on and on. People think the government covers all costs for us, and it's unfortunately not true. Because of all the troubles they have, families are at times in need of help and greatly need our patriotic citizens to give them a helping hand by sending in donations. SAMFAM, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3 foundation that is dedicated to helping America's active military. We understand that separation is difficult, and being a single parent while your significant other is protecting our homeland is a burden that few can relate to. Our mission is to provide support, protection, and help boost morale and peace of mind for the active duty military. We also want to assist retired veterans. The families we help are chosen through essays. Now here is where we ask for help. Right now, we can only accept checks made out to SAMFAM, Inc. That is SAM-FAM, Inc. 18 Eastern Avenue, Sacow, Maine, 04072. And that's SACO. Make sure to put my name or one of the other members' names on there so this can be credited with the right person. Your donations are tax deductible. Thanks in advance, and God bless.
Hey, it seems people are forgetting again. Islam and world domination thing. That is the reason for the last article I did here, but be expected to get more Islamic hate from this show because today I do hate Islam. It is a cult and very deadly. Remember Jim Jones? Islam could end up just like that did, with many people dead if they don't follow Islam and their ways. And even if they follow Islam and their ways, they could still end up dead. And yes, Cliff, even here in America. From Daily Roll Call, and Kathy Hinners comes this one. Is it only a religious thing until changes are made? This one is a good one, folks. We have to listen to this because this is not something that is made up every day, every week when I talk about this kind of thing. This kind of thing happens, and this one here is in Tennessee. That's here in the United States, folks. In 2011 at Ravenwood High School in Brentwood, Tennessee, a young Muslim girl, Demon Zawidi, created a stir due to her not being able to wear her hijab while participating in the ROTC program. It was during Spirit Week. We were getting ready for the homecoming parade, and the head officer said that I wouldn't be able to wear the headscarf while I had the uniform on, Demon said. I said that it was a religious thing, that I really couldn't take it off. Now, we have to remember this one here, folks. She said, quote, I said it was a religious thing and that I really could not take it off, unquote. Now, remember that one. Demon's family believed she was being discriminated against and reached out to the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, which called on the school district and the Department of Defense to change the policy. CARE later wrote to Defense Secretary Leon Panetta requesting constitutionally protected religious accommodations for the girl and for future Muslim JROTC participants. In a letter CARE sent to Panetta on Panetta's behalf, then Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army Larry Stubblefield explained that based on the incident that led Zawidi to quit JROTC, the Army would now be making more accommodations for religious headwear in the training program. And there you have it. A Muslim complains she is being discriminated against. They call CARE Hamas. The change is made all due to Ms. Zawidi claiming it was a religious thing. So why, after 5 years, did Ms. Zawidi stop wearing her religious thing? She really couldn't take it off? The answer lies in the above excerpt from this article about where it says the Army agrees to review discriminatory rule against Muslim headscarves. It's all about change, altering policies to accommodate Muslims. The pictures included in the article is Demon Zawidi in 2011 when she was claiming discrimination in which she was wearing her hijab. However, in 2016, 2017, 2018, and even in 2019, Ms. Zawidi apparently no longer feels that religious thing means the same after the United States military made changes to their headgear policy. There are pictures of her with other American girls. First one shows four girls, two blondes, two dark-haired girls. One is a black girl. The one next to the black girl is Zawidi. Does she have a hijab on? No. And that was in 2016. In 2017, she's with three people. Is she wearing a hijab there? No. Is she outside in public? Yes. The next one shows her with four in a picture with four people in it. She's one. Three Muslim girls with the hijab on. But does Zawidi have hers on? Nope. She's got her hair down and she's got a smile on her face. But she's not wearing her religious thing that she said she had to wear, so there had to be changes in the law. She doesn't have it on. 2019. Caption under the picture says, "It is amazing how that religious thing lasted just long enough for the United States military to change its policy." The last picture shows her in a low-cut blouse with a little bit of modesty, not a lot. She's showing some of her chest. No hijab. But these, there were eight photos of her after the ruling, where she made that ruling come to be because wearing a hijab was something she had no choice in the matter of doing. She had to wear it. It was a religious thing. But all these photos afterwards from 2017, like I said, 2018 and 2019, and if you didn't know they were her, you would have thought she was just an average dark-haired, pretty American girl. No hijab. Imagine that. The last two were even of her in a lower-cut shirt. Religious head coverings, modest dress, not in these photos. Now that changes have been made because of what she went to court for, they aren't needed. She doesn't have to wear them anymore. Just the prop that was needed to make changes that should never have been made in the first place. Unless, of course, she was in her part of the world and they weren't being worn there. But here in the United States, in Tennessee, they should never have been made, those changes. In our military, they should never have been made, those changes. And hello, in the chat room. Good to see you here. Yeah, he says, you're under chemtrails, huh? Yeah, well, there's probably a few of those out there, but I can't see them because of the clouds. But this whole thing, we have to stop and think about this, folks. Here in the United States, these changes that were made for this girl should never have been made. This is our country, not theirs. If they want to come here, then they need to change to our way of doing things. Just the same way as if we went to their country, we'd have to change for their way of doing things. But there was also a link to another article on Daily Roll Call, and the column called Articles of Interest. And that said, more terror-linked Muslim groups on Capitol Hill as Rashida Tlaib and AOC host AMP. I clicked on the link, expecting to get this story on what was going on. But here's what I got. This site has been archived or suspended for a violation of our terms of service. For more information and to contact us, please read this support document. You see, my friends, what we are doing here in America? What we are expected to do here is they are coming to our country. They should assimilate to our country. But that's not what is happening here. They're coming to our country, but we're assimilating to them. Where is the logic in this? Because I sure don't, you know, I wish somebody would tell me some logic in this, because I don't see any. If we went over to their country, we would have to assimilate into their culture. And they'd probably cut your head off if you said, no, you assimilate to me. We'd lose our lives. But over here, we're kneeling down and saying, Oh, yes, you must be assimilated. So we must assimilate to you. Folks, this is our country, not theirs. They need to assimilate to the American ways, as was said in the chat room. They need to assimilate to us. If they want to come here, then they assimilate to us, not the other way around. They can complain and bitch and moan all they freaking want. But this is not their country. This is not the place for them to say that we need to assimilate to them. They want us to assimilate to them. Then what they need to do is go back to their country and assimilate Americans who go there. Leave America alone. And you all wonder why America is having so many problems now that it's never had before. I just gave you a big one. A very, very big one. And it seems like nobody seems to understand this. You bring up a situation like this where you're saying that if they come to America, they need to assimilate to us. Oh, my God, that's hate speech. You can't say stuff like that. Where is the truth in all of this? Because it sure as hell isn't in anything I just got through talking about, except for the parts that I put in there about how if they come here, they need to assimilate to us, not us the other way around. To the left, to Muslims, to Islam, the truth is never something that doesn't agree with them. The truth always has to be what agrees with them. And it's like I have said so many times before, you make a lie the truth to where everybody believes that lie as the truth, it's still a lie. I don't care how many times you tell people it's the truth. If it's a lie in the first place, it's still a lie. And we have to stop and think about stuff like this, folks, because if we don't, the freedoms that we enjoy in this country will disappear. And once they're gone, they are gone. They're not the kind of thing that you can have go away and then bring back on another day. Because if we let our freedoms go away, it will take a very, very, very bloody war to get them back, if it's at all possible. Our Constitution was designed by men who saw everything that's going on today happening. And they put fail-safes in there. And the problems that we have with a lot of these fail-safes that were put into the Constitution to save us in times like this is the fact that the Democrat Party knows that they're there too. And a lot of them have been gotten rid of. If not by just outright getting rid of them with a vote, they've gotten rid of them by precedents. It's like Obamacare. 70% of the people did not want that to happen. When it was voted on in our government, not one Republican voted for it. Yet it was passed, over the objections of most of the American people. And then when they tried to pass it, they tried to give us this stupid line of, we have to pass it to see what's in it. That should have told people right then and there, we are in trouble if this thing gets into law. But one of the things that the government was looking at, and this is the reason that they're constantly trying to push laws on us that we don't want, because they know that once it's become a law, it's harder than hell to get it to become not a law. If something becomes a law, 9 times out of 10, it will stay a law, whether it's a good one or a bad one. Now, the mandate for Obamacare is gone, but Obamacare is still there. Nobody's had the guts enough to vote that thing out like they should have. Thankfully, the bad part of it, the mandate, is gone. Because I fought like the devil to keep from having to sign up for Obamacare. Trouble is, where I was working at the time, because it became law, it was something I had to do. And you know who actually won on that one? It wasn't any of us. Even the ones that Obamacare seemed to help, it wasn't any of them either. And it's like was said in the chat room, most of the laws on the books are unconstitutional, if not outright bad laws. And that's true. So many of the laws that are on the books were wrong in the first place, should never have been passed, but they're still there. One of the things that I used to get a kick out of is going through the different states, seeing old archaic laws that were stupid in the first place, or even stupider today, but they're still there. I think I read somewhere here in Indiana where it was illegal to read a book after nighttime outside, something like that. That's still on the books. It's never enforced, but it's still there. If somebody wanted to be stupid, like the Democrats do nowadays, they'll come out and they'll find a law that's like, the Republicans have done this too. They'll come out and find a law that was passed years and years and years ago, has never been used, and they'll say, well, this is a law. We can enforce this. But what the government doesn't understand is that a person could stand up and not obey unconstitutional or bad laws. Most people don't even realize this one. You might get thrown in jail for a minute or two or even a day or so, but eventually you can fight and prevail. But that's where a lot of people will look at it and they'll say, well, if I have to fight this in court, it's going to cost a lot of money. Even though if you won, it really wouldn't. Because you can make it so that the loser actually has to pay for your way of doing things, you know, if you win. But then there's always that thought too, well, what if I lose? Then I have to pay for their way too. Money and time, that's all it is. I'm getting some great ideas here from the chat room. This is fantastic. What I had done was I had gone in and started looking for stuff last night for this show. And I usually spend most of my Saturdays, most of my Sundays getting my stuff for my shows. Well, I just actually found out that the articles that I've read so far, you know, the two about Islam and the one I started out the show about the media going bonkers because Trump has announced that he's going to run for president for a second term. Those are the only things I got for my show tonight. There is absolutely nothing else in my notes. And I didn't really think about it because I was sitting there thinking, okay, fine, you know, with this thunderstorm watch, I'm probably not going to have much more than an hour show, and it's already been an hour. But I've got the show scheduled for an hour and a half. So here I am, out of stuff to talk about, but there's all kinds of things that I can actually find. And it's not something that is hard to do anymore. All you have to do is look, you know, find the right places to look. You know, one of the articles that just came up, Oregon's leftist governor orders state troopers to round up GOP senators. Really? This one from Conservative Tribune. It, to me, this is amazing. We have governors of a state Kate Brown, the Democratic governor of Oregon, just sent the police after Republican senators. According to the Oregonian, all 11 Republican senators are in hiding to avoid being given Oregon Senate the necessary quorum to vote on carbon reduction bill. The Republicans made no effort to hide their plan. But Senator Cliff Bentz told the Oregonian, in a few moments, I will not be in Oregon. Oregon House of Representatives recently passed the bill, but 10 hours worth of negotiations on the language between Republicans and Democrats in Oregon were unsuccessful in reaching an agreement. That's when the Republicans decided to ditch town. I do not believe state police will be able to find any of our members, Senator Tim Copsett, a Republican from Bend, Oregon, told NPR. So instead of the Democrats putting efforts into finding bipartisan solutions, their answer was to waste state police resources and try to track down legislators and arrest them. Sounds more like a dictatorship than a democracy to me. In response to the Republican exodus, Oregon Senate President Peter Courtney formally requested that Governor Brown dispatch Oregon State police troopers to round up those rowdy GOP lawmakers. The governor granted the request and called the GOP's actions unacceptable. Now, what the heck would happen if they were in a situation where they didn't have the majority and the Democrats did the same thing? Can you imagine the things that the Democrats would be saying? That's unconstitutional. You can't do that. try and change that around. Well, you did that to the Republicans once. That doesn't matter. That was in the past. This is now. You can't do that. That's how Democrats work. You know, and I used to have the, I don't know, a guy in the chat room says, the sole purpose of government, secure the rights of all people, equally and individually. It'd be great if she'd call. It really would. He says, my wife can call you if I like. She has studied the Constitution and the writings of the founders, so it's straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. That would be awesome. I also have another friend of mine who calls every once in a while, and he teaches Constitution classes in California. Can you imagine being a constitutional conservative in California teaching the Constitution? I have so much respect for Doug, it's not funny. But yeah, if your wife wants to call, have at it. I would enjoy that discussion. That would be just absolutely wonderful. I've read the Constitution. It doesn't take that long to read. It's not that long a thing to read, really. A lot of people who won't read it think that it's a huge, long document. It's not. It can be read not too awful very long. It can be understood, too, believe it or not. But you get a bunch of Democrats and try to tell them that the Constitution is easy to understand if you just read it. And they'll laugh in your face. They will laugh in your face because they don't believe that, for one thing. And for another thing, they don't believe the Constitution. It's irrelevant anymore, according to the left. Only socialism is what we need. Socialism and AOC. That's what we need. Anything to tear this nation apart. Anything to just destroy what we have. Anything to destroy our freedoms. But that is what we've got. And I have a phone call from 909. And I was told that you would call. Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. It's funny you were speaking about your friend that lives in California. And my husband and I live in Southern California in Ontario. So.
Well, he lives in Murrieta, over by
okay.
Murrieta.
Yeah, he was actually away at all.
Yeah, and he was actually the one that when they were busing the people in to Murrieta, he's the one who actually broke that story. He ended up on CNN. He ended up on Fox and Friends. That was his moment of glory, I think. But he's gone through a lot since he started. Him and I actually started Blog Talk Radio together practically in 2007.
Wow.
And he's still there. He does a show called, oh heck, now I can't even remember. It was just right there. His blog is Political Pistachio. And he teaches Constitution. And a lot of times when I have problems and I don't, there are things about the Constitution I don't know, I get a hold of him. Now I know somebody else.
Yes. Yes, we would probably have some good conversations. It's difficult to find people who not only have read it, but can appreciate it and, you know, apply it or know what's actually going on with our government, to know that so much of what's going on is unconstitutional. We're so far away.
This whole thing that, you know, and something I've been saying for a long, long time is that, you know, when it comes to Sharia law and how we're trying, how our government's trying to bring in all these Muslims and they're bringing in Sharia law. Sharia law and the Constitution are not compatible.
Right. Right.
And one or the other has to go if they're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And immigration, as a matter of fact, is a liberal construct that had happened, you know, a long time ago. And little by little, with that, those, I guess, values, you could say, they're taking over, you know, our country and destroying it, basically. You have, you know, where we don't have the one genders anymore, the two genders anymore. You have immigrants with non-compatible religious backgrounds or culture and others that have incompatible cultures and lifestyles and religion, but they've chosen to assimilate. So, you know, when we say we have immigrants, that this country was built on immigrants, yes, but those immigrants assimilated and became Americans. And so there's a difference. We don't have,
yeah.
You know, here we have now little China, little Korea, you know, and in these little towns, the language on their signs, on their menus, on their products are not in English. And so it's purposely done that way to keep Americans out, because we don't speak their language. And
well, you know, one of the things that I've always found out, you know, if people would study history and
mm-hmm.
and realize what has happened, any country that has gone to several languages has always failed.
Yes. Well, our founding fathers at the beginning, when we were welcoming immigrants because we needed to build a country. And so once we had enough people here and we did that cutoff line, we had made immigration laws to the tone of being, 12 years in the process of becoming an American. And they did that to give the people time to learn about the country, to assimilate, to work. And so by the time the 10 years was up, they were Americans, rather than just having people come in continuously with that open door, because then you have factions starting to develop, because if they're comfortable with the people that they came with or are here, and so they're not going to reach out to do anything else. They're going to be in these little groups all over the United States, and those little groups are going to feel alienated, and then they'll start to reject the government and the laws because they never learned to assimilate. And so, you know, if that's what the Democrats want to do now as far as open doors, and it's not a good thing. What Congress has done is, like you said earlier, as far as deemed the Constitution pretty much irrelevant, or they try to call it a living, breathing document, which means that they can change it and alter it as the wind blows. And as you said, again, the amendments that are made to the Constitution are very difficult to make. There's a process that they have to go through, and that is as far as getting a consensus among the states. But other than that, no, because the Founding Fathers knew that if they could change it at a whim, that it wouldn't be intact. It would just be destroyed, basically, picked apart. And so it kind of is now, but they've gone around things.
Actually, they've gone around things in more ways than one, because it's like the Electoral College. That was something that was set up by the Founding Fathers because they could see large populated areas becoming liberal and running the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely right. And they, for some reason, have developed this holier than thou, I'm above the people, the little people below, and we know what's best. I mean, the origin of the legislative power individual rights, and they precede legislative power, and therefore legislative power exists solely to ensure individual rights, as my husband had stated in the chat room. And the legislator, with his delegated responsibility, cannot be exalted above the inherent rights of the individual, which is he is charged to protect life, liberty, and property.
Yeah.
Do not exist. These things do not exist without the people. They exist because we, the people, put them there. And they seem to think they exist because they were elected. They're elected are the lobbyists and the corporations, yeah. And that's not the people. And that's unfortunate.
One of the other things that especially the left likes to say is that we need to have separation of state, church and state, and they say it's in the Constitution. It's not.
But what was meant by that, it was said in Congress, and this was because of most of the congregation at that time, or most of Congress, had Christian beliefs. Then there were those that didn't believe, and then there were others, Jewish and so forth. And what they meant by that was that one religion couldn't be favored amongst another. So as far as church and state goes, it doesn't mean that church can't be in state or religion can't be in state, because we have the money that says, you know, in God we trust. When we begin a congressional session, they pray before it. And so to separate church and state only means not to elevate or favor one religion over another, saying that this one is exalted above all other religions and has favor of whatever they want to do, and the rest of you guys got to suck eggs. So,
yeah, well, you know, and that's what I was essentially, you actually put it to words, whereas I never really could, but I knew that separation of church and state was not in the Constitution. It was something that has kind of been developed.
It was talked about in the original Constitution before we got a second stab at it. And so it wasn't put in the second one, but it was in the first. They discussed it, and they figured, well, people will know that we need to separate these powers or separate them, and we won't worry about it because we have everything pretty much labeled with God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see really any problem. But then we didn't think about immigrant Muslims and who have a completely different religion. And yeah, there wasn't much thought about that because they trusted us, the people, to protect what they gave us, what we inherited, and, you know, guard it with our lives. But not so much so.
I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, you know, he was asked, what have we been given? And he said, it's a republic, ma'am, for as long as we can keep it. And I think he had his ideas about, you know, people moving away from that idea or being taught a different way in schools or something and then not really learning what the Constitution was about and what this republic really is. And one of the things that just drives me insane is that, you know, even Rush Limbaugh calls us a democracy. You know, every once in a while, he'll come along and say, well, we are really a constitutional republic. But he does say we are a democracy. We are not. We are actually probably closer to a democracy now than we ever have been.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But,
it's more, it's slowly been converted to a democratic republic. And originally, yes, you're correct. It was intended to be a constitutional republic. So along the lines that changed too.
It'll continue to change as long as the people don't realize what's going on. And I think that's one of the reasons why they won't teach, you know, because I've got school age kids in my house, and the things that they don't know that I knew at their age just astounds me.
It's
not just about the world, but about the United States.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny you say that. I had come across a YouTube channel of these young men, and their channel is FaZe Clan, Fozzy Clan, F-A-Z-E. And all they do is play games, you know, online. They have a agent that gets sponsors to pay them to play games. And, of course, then you have people who watch these gamers on Twitch and YouTube play live, and they're allowed to donate.
I know, I've got one here in the house.
And so forth. Yeah, okay. And so they themselves, amongst themselves, had decided they wanted to test their intellect, and they said, we're going to do if we're smarter than a fifth grader. And so they had questions for each other. And the one that comes to mind most is, who was the first president of the United States? And they said, Abe Lincoln. I just about fell over and went, what? You guys are playing, right? You're kidding, right? And when they were given the answer, George Washington, and, oh, that's right, I knew that. And they thought it was funny.
Yeah, well, one of the guys that I get a kick out of watching, he goes out on the streets and asks these just insane questions. Anybody who knows the American Constitution or knows the laws of this nation and the way it was set up will say something just outright ridiculously dumb, and people will believe him. And I can't remember his name right now.
They don't question or anything. They just take it for what he says, huh?
Exactly.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, he goes to college campuses for the most part and brings up something about something that Congress is doing that they're really not. you know, he'll say something like, Congress is now trying to make a law to where Americans cannot debate any other country if they're here in America or something stupid like that. And they'll say, yeah, that's a great idea. We should, you know, that should be passed. That is like, okay, really?
Just wants to wipe out the First Amendment altogether there.
Yeah. But he always ends his thing saying, you know, talking about how they're not being taught anymore the values of America and the values of life in America. And his videos show it. And he does them from colleges. And maybe one in 20 people will get their answer right. And it just kind of just blows me away just how far down the wrong road our colleges and our schools are.
It seems that we had taken the phrase that was said when we were young as far as, why do I need to know that for? I'm never going to use it, to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Because the teachers said, okay, we'll throw it out.
And almost everything I said that I would, you know, never use, I use daily.
Mm-hmm.
It seems.
Mm-hmm. Everybody does. If you think about history and if you think about civics, these are all things that we should use daily if we are informed, if we are knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not, then, you know, of course they wouldn't be used. But then what you end up doing is turning over your rights to the government to be run. And some people are actually okay with that, some youngsters, and that's frightening, never realizing that there can be tyrannical.
I've kind of noticed that. Probably a good 40% of the youth anymore think that America is archaic and shouldn't be, you know, under a constitution anymore, and that we should go to socialism. Well, you know, if they'd have been taught the right things in school, they'd know that no socialist country has ever worked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it'll work halfway until the people's money is gone, and then
and then we'll be equally poor.
Yeah.
Yes, and a lot of the Democrats are running with this whole universal basic income, and that hasn't worked either. It was first tried in Finland, then Norway tried it, then Sweden tried it, Canada tried it, and here in California, in one of our cities, had tried it. And all have failed. The programs were cut off. They were pilot programs. They were cut off early in all the different countries because it just was not practical as far as the expense went. And it was just a pilot program of a small community that they had done, and they ended up, you know, hurting themselves financially or economically when they did that. But
I think I heard something about, I think California actually turned to Trump for help, financial help, I think a couple months ago.
We're always turning to him. We're always turning to him for money. And then if they had the gall to tell the news, whoever wants to listen, mainstream media, oh, we're in the black. Our books are in the black. In fact, we have overage, you know. We're doing just dandy, and yet they're asking for money. And I supported a lot of the free-for-alls of money. Our governor was constantly asking, and Obama would, you know, do what he could, and of course that money would come, and then they would pay our bills again, and it's just ridiculous. But I wanted to mention something real quick before I let you go, is that what people need to understand, we complain about the government, and we're set in our ideologies, whether it's left-wing or right-wing, not even considering the extremists on both sides. But what people don't understand is originally, 7 years before our present Constitution was drafted, John Adams wrote in a letter in 1780 that there, quote, there is nothing which I dread so much as a division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and concerting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is to be dreaded as the greatest political evil under our Constitution. Now, what boggles my mind is why it was never put into the Constitution that we have now. I don't know. I mean, was it intentional back then? I don't know. I we'd have to ask them what they were thinking. But
yeah.
They passed the Constitution in 1787, and they didn't include that in there as far as that, you know, no two parties, because that creates problems. It'll, you know, destroy the country, and that's what's happening now.
Yeah. And we're actually just, a lot of the people are just sitting back and watching it happen. It's like, okay, why, you know, we'll have people in our government say something that's just so asininely wrong, and nobody says anything.
Mm-hmm.
Until after the fact, until the person who said it's long gone, and we'll probably never hear what this person actually says. You know, that's one of the things that's always bothered me, is that, you know, the media or people who listen to these kind of things being said about America and about what we're doing and what we need to be doing. If it's completely wrong, somebody should speak up. You
mm-hmm.
know, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've never gone into the media, because I would probably, if I ended up on the White House press corps and somebody asked a question like that, I'd probably say something to set them straight. That I'd get in trouble for it or something like that, especially if it was a president that actually wanted that kind of question.
Yeah. Well, I applaud shows like yours that talk about these things. So hopefully it will drum up curiosity enough for someone to look into these things a little bit further. If I may, I would suggest that you look into what's called the Tax Act. It's capital T, capital A, T as in Paul, Act. And this Tax Act is a threat assessment policy that Congress is looking into passing. Republicans have actually co-signed it. They've got co-signers for it. And what it is that they want to put these task force across the country in every community. Community is cities. These hubs, task force hubs, will have surveillance, behavioral surveillance, supposedly as a national security in order to prevent, like, shootings that happened at Parkland in Florida. To me, this seems a little extreme when we don't have these events occurring every day. Yes, we do, and it's very sad and unfortunate. But when we look at the actual core item of what is causing these things, the person themselves that committed the act, it usually points to mental illness. Now, in this particular act, mental illness, as far as looking into it and considering it as a behavioral issue, it's one of the last items on the list of what this task force is to be created for. They have facial recognition programs that are being used in 18 states right now. This came from a committee hearing 2 weeks ago, the judicial committee hearing. A panel had told the committee their research and studies show that the facial recognition is 95% inaccurate, and that they fear that these police departments that are using this are imprisoning people or jailing people falsely, because when you have a 95% inaccuracy, there's a problem. And this facial recognition software is to be used in combination with this task force. So basically, they'll be centered in your city, surveilling you with cameras as you go to the store, as you walk to your car, and to make sure that your behavior isn't anything outside the box. And if it is, you know, then they'll deal with it to make sure that you're not a threat to your community. So,
okay, and the name of that was, how's that spelled again?
Capital T, as in Terry Tall Tomorrow.
Okay.
A, as in Alpha. P as in Paul. S, as in Sam. Uh-huh. And then ACT. CAPS ACT.
I'm going to have to look that one up. That, you know, and they could actually get away with something like that easier than most people imagine, because if they look around, there's cameras everywhere.
Yes, and what the deal is with that is we have a fighting chance against it, as far as the people are concerned, because they cannot do a blanket thing like that across the 50 states. The states have to opt in to be able to do it, and then they'll receive federal dollars in order to help them get that off the ground, the program. But it's an opt-in thing. So, you know, if we speak out, you know, from our states and say, no, this is not what we want, knock it off, kill it.
Yeah, that
we have a chance. So, you know, it's not like they can bring it before and say and vote on it, and then it's done. We actually have an opt-in, you know, option with that. So that's a good thing. But yes, please look into it. And if you feel that it's warranted a show, which in my opinion, yes, because when they start monitoring our behavior,
I think it would be too.
Yeah. So thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, anytime. And if you always welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. And keep up the good work.
No, I try. gotta get the word out here somehow. You know.
Well, you're doing great.
You're doing great.
But thank you very much.
And I appreciate your call. God bless you.
Absolutely. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Okay, we are now out of time. Like I said, I had just scheduled an hour and a half show, and I got myself a brand new ending song, which I just was one of those things I wanted to get on here and played heck trying to find it. And when I finally found it, I couldn't get it into an MP3 format, which I needed to have. So I actually recorded it from the MP4 that I had. But we will be back next week. We've also got another couple of shows that are going to be starting up soon on CNM, which is really, to me, a great thing, because I've been trying to build this up again since it kind of disappeared. I have another show that's on Saturdays, Black by Color Only, with Vincent Brown. He hasn't been on the past couple of weeks because he's got problems at home. But he will be back again soon. And I have another one that's coming, and his wife wants to be on a show also. And he's got another friend who wants to be on another show. So we've got several shows that are coming, and I'm running out of time. I will be here next week, and I will see you again next week. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, as I always say, we will not be ruled. Have a good day.
I can read your mind. We ain't about to get any longer, and I know why. You think we owe you when we don't. Yeah, there's a welfare line wrapping round Main Street. That money ought to help our boys coming back from overseas. We're gonna paint this country red like Reagan. Gonna shoot our guns, gonna eat our bacon. There's a great big bald eagle who's smiling on us, and soldiers who died for your privilege to fuck. If you wanna leave, you can't take it no more, and I'll show you the damn door. I'll show you the damn door. These protests, you're throwing out some heavy words, and I'm just wondering, how the hell'd you get off work? Cause I got 65 long hours that I just put in last week. Now I gotta go back home, hear you whining on TV. We're about to paint this country red like Reagan. Gonna shoot our guns, gonna eat our bacon. There's a great big bald eagle who's smiling on. Privilege to fuck. If you want to leave, you can't take it no more, and I'll show you the damn door. We're about to paint this country red like Reagan. Gonna shoot and eat that bacon. There's a great big bald eagle who's smiling on us, and soldiers who died for your privilege to fuss. If you want to leave, if you can't take it no more, and I'll show you the damn door. I'll show you the damn door.
That eagle. God bless him. God bless you all.